Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
95.7 The Game. Live and local. Now, it's Rick Tittle on 95.7 The Game.
Thank you so much. Welcome back to 95.7 The Game. I am Rick Tittle. Be on the mic for another hour here. We'll throw it over to my homies, Zach and Guru, after that. So it's a good time to get in. They're going to have fascinating conversations. They're going to fight each other. They're going to hug each other. But this is a good time to get in at 888-957-9570. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk to Steve Berman, the Bay Area sports guy, get his perspective on what's going on, especially with the Niners coaching search. 888-957-9570, text line 95795. The Raiders, the one thing that they did, quote-unquote, win this year is an offseason without huge upheaval and major questions. Obviously, when you don't have a winning season, you have more questions than answers, but they don't have questions at the very important spots, such as head coach, quarterback, and GM, at least not going into the 2016 season. When it comes to the coaching situation with the Niners and people thinking about maybe Chip Kelly and what a tight ship he would run, it's funny because we had heard from some of the players that Chip Kelly's camps were too pampered and that there were massages and that there were smoothies. And then at the end of everyday camp, they got a little questionnaire. What can we do to make it better for you? That in and of itself doesn't mean that you're going to have a soft team. I just look for discipline. And I remember going to Napa when Lane Kiffin was the head coach. And I looked around, and it was a country club. It was just guys laying around. Nobody ever hit an air horn. It's like, oh, my hell. And then I thought, well, then again, sometimes when guys are relaxed and they're trusted, they can play well. But discipline is the most important in football than any other sport by far. The old chain is its weakest link. You got 11 guys, and one guy moves the wrong way, does the wrong thing, and the whole thing goes down the toilet. And then, in the end, we saw how well the Raiders played under Lane Kiffin. So the whole Chip Kelly thing, remember, he's not exactly a taskmaster, a martinet, a Paris Island drill instructor like you might think he is. Let's go to Michael in San Francisco. Michael, you're on 95.7 The Game.
Awesome. Thanks for taking my call.
What's up, man?
I just kind of wanted to get, I don't know if I could, your thoughts on Hugh Jackson. So I think he looks pretty good, you know, what I've seen from the Bengals offense. And I just wanted to know kind of your opinion on, you know, how much of that is his coaching and how much of it is the product of the personnel. Because they have, you know, an amazing 1-2 punch in Giovanni Bernard and Hill. They got one of the best receivers in the league in A.J. Green. You know, a pretty decent defense. So just kind of curious, wanted to pick your brain, what you thought, kind of what he could bring to the Niners franchise, kind of what his expertise is. And if they bring him on, do you think he would hang on to Cap and try to do something with him, or would he move on and look to maybe Goff in the draft or something like that? So,
all right, hey, Michael, thanks for the call. It's a great question. I don't think Hugh is in a position where he's going to say, I'll come, but only if Cap is here, or vice versa. I think he's just going to come and he'll talk to Trent and they'll figure it out. I don't know what his thoughts are on that, but if you're a schemer, you can do a whole hell of a lot more things you can with Kaepernick than Gabbard, but maybe they are in love with Goff. I think they're going to have to move up. He won't be there at 7. But then again, if you want somebody who's going to manage the game better, then Gabbard obviously is not as cray as Cap is right now. But I'll tell you this about when you asked the question whether it was a personnel thing. And yeah, you need the horses. There's no doubt. I mean, Phil Jackson had Michael and Phil Jackson had Kobe. You need the horses. But I just think about his time in Oakland. And Marcel Reese, a former Pac-10 wide receiver, put it fullback and exploited in passing situations. And here you have some Mike linebacker with his fingers all taped up running down a seam on a wheel route from a fullback. You know, and then usually that's the guy that's going to take that fullback. You're not going to have an outside linebacker key on a fullback unless he's in a one-back set. So he found ways. He found a way to get something out of Darren McFadden. Now, McFadden finally stayed healthy. I do think that he was in love with the screen too much. It's sort of like how Musgrave is in love with the hitch pass, which was probably called, 30% of the plays this year for the Raiders? I'm not even lying. Just take the snap, throw it over. Did it ever go for more than a two-yard gain? It was usually a four-yard loss. So nobody's perfect. But Hugh Jackson got very creative with the personnel the Raiders had. And then you look at, I was just talking with Jay Morrison, the beat writer from Cox Media Group in Cincinnati, and he said he's never seen Andy Dalton the way he was this year. He was just ebullient with energy. He was affable. He was much more leadership skills. And you could chalk that down to, 4 or 5 years in the league. But that's the kind of personality Hugh Jackson is. I talk about his dealings with the press, and every Monday we'd go into Alameda, not in the huge room, but the little media room, and he'd come in and he'd have a comment for just about everybody. That food on the plane. Hey, what's going on? And hey, you, St. Mary's Lacrosse. Hey, you played lacrosse there? Oh, cool. Just whatever it was. And then if somebody was asking a dumb question, he'd be like, what? Who? Why would you think that? He would play with you one way or the other. But then again, you think about the Detroit game and some of the decisions there. But taking town, look what he did with Jason Campbell. When Jason Campbell was at Auburn and they went undefeated, but they weren't invited to the national championship game, that wouldn't happen nowadays. They would have gone to the playoffs. Tommy Tuberville still got them their rings. The whole backfield were first-round picks. Cadillac, Williams, Ronnie Brown, Jason Campbell by the skins. And then it didn't really work out in Washington. And Al said, look at Jason Campbell. Look at Steve Young. Took him a while to win a Super Bowl. Look at John Elway. Took him a while. And we're kind of saying, yeah, I don't think Jason Campbell is Steve Young or John Elway, but we hope you're right. He got some very good play out of him. Now, remember Carson Palmer, that first game, Hugh said he won't play. And I was sitting in this chair, and I was being half facetious, half serious when I said Kyle Bowler will throw a pick six on his first pass. That's how bad he is. That's if he can take the snap. He did take the snap, and he threw a pick six on his first pass. I didn't like being right on that one, but that everyone knew how atrocious he was. And then Palmer went in, and what did he do? Throw like three more picks? He just was not ready to step into that offense. But you think about the coming year. What was Hugh going to do now? They hired a general manager, Reggie McKenzie, and Hugh said, I went in there, I went to work, and I was going to sit down with Reggie, and what are we going to do in the draft? What are we going to do about free agents? And I was told I was fired. He was absolutely flabbergasted. I think Hugh was more shocked than anyone in the media or anyone in the NFL that he got fired after going 8-8. But therein lies the tradition of a guy coming in and he wants his guys. This is my ship. You were 7-5 and you blew it down the stretch. You said you were pissed at your players. I don't want a guy like that. And a lot of times too, when a guy is fired and another one's promoted from a coordinator position, they don't get the kind of respect they deserve. I think people think, oh, it's a war bride relationship. You don't really love each other. Look at this interim coach. Tom Cable, the only reason he got the job is because Al was getting turned down left and right. Russ Grimm, no. Ken Wisenhunt, no. Bobby Petrino, no. Pat Hill, no. Steve Sarkisian, no. It's like Steve Sarkisian, offensive coordinator for Pete Carroll at USC. Okay, well, who's your assistant offensive coordinator? Lane Kiffin? His dad, Monty's a pretty good DC in the league. Well, let's bring him in. It was sad. No one would say yes to that job. Nobody. And it's just, the parade of clowns that the Raiders have had at head coach. And it was risky. If you think now, here you had one of the hottest coaching commodities in the NFL and a guy that's going to get some MVP votes in Carson Palmer. You had the quarterback and you had the coach. And the first thing you did was you said, okay, these guys are gone.
You're fired.
Now what are we going to do? Thank you, Donald. The Donald. Now what are we going to do? So I do think Hugh Jackson is a little bit of a loose cannon, and that one, that's why he kind of scares me a little bit, but I think that's probably maybe a 5% thing. Even calling him a loose cannon, I think, is unfair to him, but I do think he has that in him. I think he can snap a little bit, as all of us can snap at some point. But I also think, as I was saying with Jack Del Rio, you learn the second time around. No one had a first year like Hugh Jackson. The simple situation, you come in and you have Al Davis right there. Al Davis was unlike any other. We could do a show every day, 3 hours a day, just about Al. Al passes away. He becomes de facto GM. That Cleveland game at the Coliseum, you have Campbell breaking his collarbone. What do we do? I can get Palmer, Amy Trask. What should I do? Go ahead if you can. Go do whatever you want. And then he gets fired. So I don't think he had a fair shake. And I was very much hoping that Hugh Jackson would have come back the next year. But then again, I'm the guy that was mad that Lakin fired Mark Jackson. Because I thought, geez, Mark Jackson got the Warriors to play defense and he got them into the playoffs. What more could you ask out of the Warriors? It was any port in a storm for the last 40 years until what we have now. So I think Hugh Jackson would be a success. I think he would love to have Goff. I think he'll make it work. If he can make it work with Marcel Reese, who's never been the player he was since Hugh Jackson left, his Pro Bowl trip this year was just because he had established a reputation and guys saw his name and they just ticked that name on the box. And a 5-game suspension or 4-game suspension for the substance abuse, whatever it was, PEDs, he said it was a mistake, but whatever. Marcel Reese had an awful season this year. Hugh Jackson finds ways to get guys to succeed, even guys who are not stars. So I can guarantee you if he does get the Niner job, the offense will score more than 14.5 points a game like they did this year. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back on 95.7 The Game.
Rick Tittle on 95.7 The Game.
We are back, 95.7 The Game, or I should say I'm back. Rick Tittle with you, and we'd love to hear from you as we talk sports. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to talk to Steve Berman, Bay Area sports guy, get his perspective of the Niner search as well. 888-957-9570. Again, 888-957-9570. As lines are open across NorCal or wherever you might happen listening in this great land of ours or so-so mediocre foreign lands. And the text line is 95795. No sponsor for that, so I'll say the text line is brought to you by donuts. Have you eaten a donut lately? From the 408, Rick, what do you think about Chip Kelly as offensive coordinator and Musgrave as quarterback coach for the Raiders? I don't think that usually guys don't fall from grace like that and just say, you want me to move down to QB coach? I don't see that happening right now. From the 415, Rick, you said Goodell is out of touch, but Goodell is the best commissioner we've ever had. I don't think so. And let me just give you a good example. And I have one about how out of touch he is. It's one thing to be Uncle Roger at the draft and give people hugs. That's what we do now. Whenever I go to Europe, especially England, where they don't say hug, they say cuddle or cuddle. Oh, I'm so sorry. Can I have a cuddle?
I thought Europe was a country.
Is it? Kelly Pickler. Is it all right? You have a hug. And here's Roger Goodell. Come here, you big bruiser. Come here. And, the guys at the draft, they always have a pimpy outfit, like maybe like white bowler, see-through cane, baby pacifier, player leg up to the knee. Then they come out and they give Roger Goodell a hug. And then you can see how little Roger Goodell is next to these guys. And you think, oh, he's in it to win it. He's part of my generation. This is what it came out this week, actually. Adrian Peterson said that when he went to talk to Roger Goodell about the whole situation with Adrian Peterson putting his baby son, what was he, 4 years old? Not a baby, but still putting him in the hospital by whipping him with a switch. And by the way, a switch, it's called that because it'll switch your attitude right quick. Out here, it's called a stick. But anyway, Adrian Peterson said the first question that Roger Goodell asked him was, what's a whooping? He goes, you said you gave your son a whooping. What does that mean? And I thought, oh, my gosh, that's not even a black or white thing. That's not even a north or south thing. Everyone knows what a whooping is. Believe me, growing up with two brothers, I hella know what a whooping is. I got a whooping, not with a stick or a switch, but I got a, how do you not know what a whooping is if you're American? That's just so, it's like when he sees those shirts, I'm going to open up a big can of whoop-ass. What does that mean exactly? Something to do with your gluteus maximus? I mean, I love it when these guys are so out of touch. It's like when Jerry Brown, somebody asked him, oh, all our kids will be eating Happy Meals at school. What's a Happy Meal? You don't know what a Happy Meal is. All right, well, why would you? Or like Joe Lacob, everyone's mad because I traded Monta. Who? I traded Monta Ellis. You traded Monte? You can't even say your own player's name? By the way, good trade now. But when you're rich like that, when you make $44 million a year, you don't know what a whooping is. And he said, right, and Adrian Peterson said, right when he said, what does a whooping mean? That I knew that I was going to have trouble trying to get through to Roger Goodell. And then, of course, Adrian Peterson went on to say, paraphrasing that he was an innocent man, which is just a load of horse hockey. You're not an innocent man, but whatever. He's now the NFL's leading rusher, and he'll watch the rest of the postseason from his couch. But I get to see Roger Goodell, like, after he met with Adrian Peterson, going over to one of his confidants or one of his little adjutant generals, his aide-de-camp, and saying, I just talked with Adrian Peterson, and he mentioned a whooping. What is a whooping? Is that like an Italian greyhound? No, that's a whippet. Oh. Well, then a whooping, I think that's like a snuffleupagus, isn't it? Isn't a whooping that's like a hand puppet? I think you're right. I think it is a whooping. There you go. So, yeah, the texter saying that Roger Goodell is down with the generation, I don't really think so. Switching to basketball for a second, in the 408, Rick, do you think that Kobe deserves to start in the All-Star game? Hashtag leading voter. Well, we'll go hoop here for a second. When it comes to the All-Star game, fine. Go ahead. Everybody wants to see Kobe one more time. I understand it. I'm not going to scream about some guy who's not going to go because he's more deserving. And listen, Kobe's going to shoot 2 for 19. Of course, he doesn't deserve to go to the All-Star game. But the All-Star game is like a celebration. It's like a lifetime achievement award, right? That's fine. The thing that irks me is when Kobe says, oh, yeah, and I'm playing in the Olympics. Oh, hell no. Now, because that's real now. The All-Star game ain't real, as is my bad grammar. But the Olympics is real, y'all, because the United States has shown that we're not going to just walk out there and lose. In the old days, you would need a crooked Russian ref to make. Remember Doug Collins? He was on that team. They left. And then, oh, no, you get one extra second, comrade. Put back USA. Yeah, I still have nightmares over that. But that team in Athens taking the bronze medal. And by the way, Kobe's two golds. Kobe didn't go to that one. You know, Kobe don't play that. And everyone was mad at AI. I'll say this about Iverson. At least Iverson went to Greece and put on the jersey. I'm not mad at anybody that showed up. I'm mad at the guys who were in a duck blind or who were on a beach somewhere. I don't feel like playing for the United States. You know, when Steph won MVP and he had his press conference over there in Oakland at the Marriott, I asked him a question. And my question was, because a lot of people were upset that Steph was playing in the FIBA championships and playing in the Balkans and other places, and his ankles were wonky, and wouldn't it be better to rest? And I said, you always answered your country's call, even when people thought you should be resting. You know, why is that? And he said, it's a dream to play for the United States in any sport. How could I possibly ever turn my back on my country? How could I say no? And I admire the hell out of Steph for that. But Kobe, All-Star game, fine. Go ahead and press the flesh and hang out with Drake and Jay-Z and Beyonce and everybody else who's going to be there. It's a party, and believe me, people want to see Kobe. And as the rules go, if you're voted in, you get in. So that's them's the rules, and he's going to start, and that's fine. But him saying, I'm going to the Olympics, and then hearing Jerry Colangelo Jr. saying that, you know, in charge of USA basketball, saying, well, Kobe's not an automatic. I go, come on, dude, grow a spine now. Grow a spine, because if you're going to tell me, look, we can take Damian Lillard or we can take Kobe. If they take Kobe, it's because they'll think, well, the ratings will be better on NBC if Kobe plays. I mean, that could be the only reason, because if you want to win, you got to take somebody who's better. And unfortunately, at this point in his career, there are a lot of players that are United States citizens that are better at playing basketball than Kobe Bryant is right now. So if they make some decision to, you know, sit a guy like Kyle Lowry at home because they want to take Kobe, that would be a disaster. From the 650, Curry, Draymond, and Clay will all be on the Olympic team, Rick. That would be great. That would be great. And Draymond, what position does he play? You know what position he plays? Triple-double. That's how I describe the position. Is he a power forward? Sometimes he shoots like a three. Sometimes he's playing like a five. The position Draymond plays right now is triple-double. All right, back to the phone lines, 888-957-9570. Mario in Tallahassee. What's up, Mario?
I heard your comment about Commissioner Goodell, and I'm no fan of him. I think he dispenses discipline in a very arbitrary and capricious manner, and I think AP is reprehensible, what he did to his child. But I'm going to play devil's advocate here. And maybe when you ask a question like that, you're trying to get to what is the state of that gentleman's mind in regards to the cultural context of that word, right? And whipping a whooping to you might mean something very different because of where you came from and where I came from than maybe Adrian Peterson. So that's, you know, you can parse out some of these things and look for the worst. But this is one of those, I can't believe I'm defending Roger Goodell.
I think you're giving him too much credit.
You think so?
Yeah, because I don't think the etymology or the semantics involving whooping or the synonyms or that you can get out of thesaurus. I think a whooping is a whooping. I don't think you can see various degrees of it. I mean, yeah, you could have a, you know, in my mind, a whooping is five lashes. In your mind, it's three lashes. Mm-hmm. A whooping is still the intention of putting a whooping on your kid.
Yeah, but maybe to you, a whooping is you don't raise welts. And maybe to a sociopath like Adrian Peterson, you do raise welts. I think in good faith have to establish what, I guess you have to establish the definition of that word in someone's mind.
Well, wouldn't you think that Adrian Peterson would say, if he did say, look, I want to qualify it. I want to know in your mind what a whooping is, to what degree a whooping is. But Adrian Peterson just said, all he said was, what is a whooping?
Well, I mean, you really trust him? He's not the most articulate guy going, right?
Hey, he went to the University of Oklahoma. He has a Sooner education, so come on. And look, you don't have to have a college degree to just say what happened in a conversation, right?
I'm not the hero. You're the one arguing that, not me. I mean, I see him interviewed, and he doesn't look. Listen, he's probably not all that forthcoming as to what happened anyway.
Right, so but I don't want AP to do my taxes. Race. But he's just saying what Roger Goodell said. He said he walked
in. You don't know that because there's no tape. You know, there's no Abraham Zapruder wasn't in the room.
Oh my gosh! You know, wait. You know Zapruder's first name?
Yeah, I think it's Abraham, wasn't it?
Ah, wait, you just said I think. Yeah, I was not impressed anymore.
I'll have another conjecture for you on your day gig on Monday.
You have your Poincaré conjecture, yes.
Yeah.
All right.
San Francisco, there's a whole lot of people who know exactly what that is.
All right, so Mario says AP is a liar and no one was there. And Roger
Goodell.
I didn't
say he was a liar. Well, yeah, maybe he did. Okay.
And so, all right. Hey, Mario, thanks for the call, man.
You bet, Rick.
Appreciate it. Let's go to Eric, who's right here in the city. What's up, Eric?
Hey, what's going on, Rick? Couple things. I just turned on radio. You were talking about the All-Star team and how it goes. To me, yeah, it's no big deal. The exhibition game, I think definitely, I don't know if Clay is on borderline, but I think with his play recently, he might make the team. But I think Curry is definitely, he's probably a shoe-in, and Draymond should be on the team. He's probably not going to have the votes to get on, but he's definitely going to get picked on by the coaches. But you made a great point about the Olympic team. Do you think maybe it's going to be a situation like, you know, remember Magic was pretty much down at the end of his career, but they gave him that sort of honorary tip-off at the end to give him, even though he didn't deserve to really be on the Olympic team, you think in that situation that he's going to be a lot like Kobe last go-around, that Popovich will throw him a bone? And do you think, how many Warriors do you think will be on there? You talked, somebody just tweeted you about I could see that Curry's a shoe, and he's going to be the starting point guard. But you know, Pop likes those long, rangy guards like big types like Clay Thompson. I don't know about Draymond. What are your thoughts on both of those? And I'll list them up.
All right, Eric, thank you so much for the call. You're breaking up there. Yeah, I think the Splash Brothers make it, and I think Draymond makes it as well. I think you'd be crazy not to take Draymond right now, especially you can Swiss Army knife him in some other positions too. I mean, let's say you're down because of injuries. You're down a center and a power forward and a small forward. I mean, like Draymond, go ahead, dude, fit in, and the guy will fit in, and he will boss teams. You know, you look at the games when Steph was out. You look at the games when Klay was out, when Bogut was out. Draymond just put that team on their back. Now, of course, Klay is going to or Steph's going to get a lot of the glory because he deserves it fully. He is the best player in the world. But the way Draymond takes those teams on their backs like that, it's fascinating. And you bring up a good point about Magic. Do you remember that there were some teams in the Olympics that didn't want to play with him because they were afraid that Magic would bleed on him and they'd get the disease and, oh, it's so scary. I didn't have as much a problem with that because that's back when the USA was sending dream teams. Now it's real. Now Argentina, Brazil, Serbia, these teams can rot. Spain, you can't take anyone lightly anymore. If you do, you lose. I expect the USA to win every basketball game they ever play, and I am shocked when they lose, sort of like England and soccer in the 1930s. Well, it's a different world now, and I don't want some honorary present given to Kobe when the USA can lose in the Olympics. It's too serious to put in some schmuck who's going to go 2-for-19 just because he used to be good. Rick Tittle with you. We'll talk to Steve Berman next on 95.7 The Game.
Rick Tittle on 95.7 The Game.
Thank you, and welcome back to 95.7 The Game. Rick Tittle with you for another half hour coming up in the next segment. As always, my last segment of the show, all sporting topics will be welcome. Football, basketball, baseball, hockey, soccer, golf, tennis, auto racing, boxing, Olympics, quidditch, rollerball, chess, checkers, rugby, cricket, that kind of stuff. Would love to take a Sharks call, a Prem call, Quakes call, anything like that. Don't be shy. 888-957-9570, text line 95795. We now are happy to welcome back to the show Steve Berman, also known as the Bay Area Sports Guy. And Steve is got a very interesting website. And Steve, I don't think anybody sort of, we really find out what a true Niner and Giants fan you are when you take guys to task, you get upset. What did you think with the Jed press conference, the mea culpas, and I'm staying off social media? When you looked at that, what were your impressions on his postmortem to this season?
Well, thanks for having me on, Rick. First of all, I think my status as a fan has definitely changed over the years. I was a pretty big fan growing up, and once you start getting press access, things sort of change, and you kind of see how the sausage is made, in a sense. And I think Jed York and the way that he's run the 49ers is a big example of that. And really with his press conference, what I took away from it, because I was at the one last year, which is really a bizarre press conference. He and Trent Baalke together just looking really arrogant and kind of looking down on everyone. They seemed very, very proud and very sure that what they were doing was right. And this time, he was a lot more contrite this year, this time around. And it seemed like he was just better prepared, you know. I think that there was a lot of questions and a lot of anger and a lot of questioning going on last year that they weren't prepared for. They just kind of figured, this is our rule, this is the law of the land, and you guys are just going to have to accept it, not just the reporters, but the fans. And I think now they've kind of taken the temperature of the landscape, and, you know, jets or planes flying overhead with banners and all the vitriol that he's faced on social media. I think he wanted to kind of quell that a bit and turn the tide a little bit public relations-wise.
When you look at how many times he said, my uncle, we know who your uncle is, but it's almost like, look, this is the guy, you know. I always kind of thought, and I was talking with Mindy Bach from CSN about this yesterday, about, you know, bringing in a guy who, you know, a McVay type, or even younger guys like a Steve Young or Brent Jones type of guy, just another voice. We know that, you know, Parag is just going to do contracts now. So it's really, I guess, outside of some scouts, it's just Trent and Jed. And I remember Mark Davis, he brought in John Madden and Ron Wolf. It couldn't hurt. Do you think that Jed is smart enough now, maybe get a few more sage voices in there?
It doesn't sound like it. I mean, based on that press conference, the only thing that I heard that had changed, really, from what he said, was that Jim Tom Silva was no longer the head coach. Like you said, Parag was still doing contracts, and that was really what his job was in the past. It just sounds like Parag is actually in the same exact role, just maybe with a new title and some more responsibilities outside of the organization. Trent's still the general manager, still has full say on personnel, and was supposedly leading the coaching search, although I think that the York family is right there with him, sort of guiding the process. in a way. So, yeah, I don't see any chance of that happening anytime soon. I mean, no one's been talked about in terms of being hired. It really, as far as, you know, like a guy like Mike Holmgren is concerned, I think a lot of people have heard that he's wanted to coach the team. He sounds like someone, he's never been a great general manager in terms of team personnel, but he seems like a good example of a guy who would be sort of a nice steward of the ship kind of deal where, you know, you can bounce ideas off of him if he's interested in doing something other than coaching. And if they don't want him to coach, I mean, just anyone like that, that's sort of wise beyond what Jed has, because Jed's a young guy. And you mentioned all the mentions of his uncle, and he did the same thing when they fired Jim Harbaugh. Sorry, mutually parted ways with Jim Harbaugh. He brought up, and really what he does is he uses it as a crutch. He says, you know, when my uncle was my age, he made some mistakes too. That's what he said after they fired Jim Harbaugh. And this time around, he said the same thing. You know, times are different now. We're about the same age, you know, but times have changed. I think mostly he means it's more of a fishbowl and social media and things of that nature. But I don't see them hiring anyone, bringing anyone in. I mean, you mentioned the Raiders, Mark Davis. The Warriors are another great example. The Warriors have a huge room full of guys who bounce ideas off each other, including Jerry West and several others.
When you look, by the way, we're speaking to Bay Area sports guy Steve Berman. I don't feel sorry for Tom Sula because he got $3 million per win. I mean, he got $15 million. He actually made more money this season than three playoff coaches combined, Kubiak, Lewis, and Rivera combined. But as a guy who was, there's no doubt he was a really good defensive line coach. From day one, was this always going to be the outcome?
It sure seemed that way, although I thought that they were going to keep him a little while longer. I think they were surprised by the amount of just the way that the team regressed over the last month of the season, and losing in Cleveland, losing in Detroit the way they did. And so I do think that they wanted to keep it a situation where they wanted to keep next year, I mean, not just for the money's sake, but also to not admit a mistake. But then as time went on, you saw, I mean, I think I mentioned the banners flying over Levi Stadium before, but I think stuff like that hurts. And who knows? I have a feeling that maybe the 49ers are facing some financial pressure, not just from season ticket holders and SBL holders who are upset, but, you know, also sponsors. I mean, if you're Levi Strauss, how happy are you with how the stadium has gone? I mean, yeah, they're getting the Super Bowl, which is nice, but there's if there's not talk about the turf being bad, it's a fight there, or the 49ers are playing terribly and there's no home field advantage, or the stadium is, you know, half full. And so I think that Jed and the Yorks probably wanted to keep Tom Sula a little while longer, but I think their hand was forced also just by how boring the team was. I mean, they're just, I can't remember a more boring team since 2007 when Trent Dilfer was the quarterback about half the season. Just a terrible offense, very unimaginative. Tom Sula is incredibly conservative too, and he kind of dug his own grave that way too.
Well, now we're hearing Hugh Jackson is the favorite. You know, surprising. A couple of years ago when he was Bengals running back coach, I thought maybe his opportunity would just be that one year with Oakland. But now we're hearing the favorite. Somebody just texted me that the Giants are now trying to get him. As a 49er guy, is he the guy you want? Or if not, who do you want, Steve?
Well, I think that he would be a fairly good choice just because of how different he is from Tom Sula. And if you look at, he's a guy who's offensive minded, but he also has experience coaching other positions on the other side of the ball as well. He can call plays. Tom Sula had no idea about X's and O's or how to handle a quarterback. Obviously, Hugh Jackson, he gave up way too much to get Carson Palmer, but obviously he was sort of proven right in the fact that Carson Palmer has turned into, you know, a pretty good quarterback in the late stages of his career, and definitely could help if the Raiders didn't dump him to Arizona. And obviously Andy Dalton is a much better quarterback this year before the injury than he was before. So I think that all those things together, plus a much more polished personality. I mean, his press conference is, you know, if the 49ers end up hiring him, which I think they want him, but I think right now the price is sort of getting driven up by maybe Hugh's agent and Mike Silver, who's a big Hugh Jackson guy, and telling everyone about how, you know, the Browns and the 49ers like him, and the Giants are now kind of jumping into the mix. But if they do hire him, the 49ers, I mean, his intro press conference is going to be a complete different deal than when we saw with Tom Sula, who was huffing and puffing and not making any sense and rambling, and Trent Baalke stepping in and correcting him. And it was just a complete disaster. And Tom Sula kind of got better at that as time went on. But still, he didn't seem like a head coach. He seemed like a guy who was just, you know, who may have been coaching high school or just the defensive lineman and never had to deal with media really on a large scale. It was sort of thrown up there when he wasn't ready. And Hugh Jackson's ready. He's a guy who can charm people. So at least from that standpoint, in terms of who they should really get, I mean, I don't know. Chip Kelly is another guy that they talked about, but he comes with his own red flags. And I think Josh McDaniels actually would be a good choice, too, because he has head coaching experience. It didn't go quite so well in Denver, but he's a brilliant offensive play caller, and obviously he's worked under Belichick for quite some time. So I think somebody like that or even Darrell Bevell might be a good choice as well. But Hugh Jackson, I think, would have at least a better chance than Tom Sula to be good.
Yeah, when McDaniels decided that the London game he'd treat like a Monday night game and he'd give his team one day to get over jet lag, and I said, I said, bet the house the Donkeys would lose. He lost a lot of points with me as far as his smarts there, but yeah, he can call plays. Finally, Steve, I can't have you on without asking you one Gyros question. Hot stove, Cueto, Samardzija, Span so far, plus an even numbered year. Are you looking forward to things?
It's going to be fun. I mean, it's really, Bruce Bochy said he never gone into a spring where the entire team is so settled the way it is with this roster. I mean, really all they're looking for is depth. I mean, even the bullpen, which they haven't gotten any bullpen arms, but that's really the one place in the minors where they're pretty well stocked. So yeah, I think they kind of bought low on all three guys, and this, which is kind of funny to say because they spent so much money. But Cueto, I think, Samardzija and Denard Span, if you'd said after 2014 that the Giants were going to get all three players, people would be parading in the streets, not just because of the World Series, because those guys were all dominant in 2014. And then they all sort of came with their questions, especially Span with all the injuries to his hip and his core. But yeah, if all three pan out, then it's an incredible offseason. There is some risk involved in all three players. You know, Cueto had an elbow injury of sorts last year that didn't really lead to much. And Samardzija was giving up home runs and hits by the truckload with the White Sox. And then Span, obviously, with the injuries, and he's over 30. But they're definitely a lot better than they were last year. And the Dodgers, you can argue, look a little weaker than they were last year without Greinke.
And you think about the equity that Samardzija built up, that in a walk year, you can give up the most earned runs in a league and still get a $90 million contract. People still do believe in you. Anyway, I'll let you get back to your, what is that, a remote-controlled moose?
There's actually somebody drilling something in our apartment right now, in our apartment building. I don't know what the heck's going on.
All right. Like, well, that's
the thing about San Francisco. There's always construction every single day, it seems like.
Were you calling me from a speakerphone, or are you in the bathroom the whole time?
No, I'm on my cell phone. I don't do any speakerphone stuff. I know the radio game. That's not good.
All right, Steve, always good to catch up with you. I appreciate your insights, especially on a weekend, and we'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, thanks, Rick.
All right, that's Steve Berman, of course, Bay Area sports guy. You can check out the website there. A lot of reporting and blogotry as well. Ebony and blogotry. Come on back. One more segment. Rick Tittle with you, 95.7 The Game.
Rick Tittle. On 95.7, The Game.
All right, what it is, welcome back to 95.7, The Game. Rick Tittle with you. One more segment. Feel free to get in at 888-957-9570, and the text line, as always, is 95795. And then we're going to have a two-man show coming up here at the top of the hour. It is the Guru and Zachariah, the biblically named show. And I got my man, Goo, right here. And Goo, we're hearing maybe to the Niners, Hugh Jack City. What you think?
I think it's time to make it happen. Make it happen. And no longer will it be the Three Stooges, because it was the Three Stooges with Tom Sula. So go ahead and get you somebody that basically the world, the football world, is saying he's a hot name. I remember that Carson Palmer offense running up and down Oco Coliseum. They didn't make the playoffs, but they, damn it, they were right there on the cusp of it. So go ahead and give him a chance. See if he can rectify cap, get a quarterback. I don't care. He's the man. You think it will happen, because I'm checking my phone and Twitter every 2 seconds. Like, he had a 5-hour interview. What do you talk about, Rick, in 5 hours?
I don't know. It's like when Gase, they interviewed him for 8 hours twice. After the first half hour of sitting around, do they want to say, okay, what do you want for lunch?
Beautiful, pretty balls.
Was that Romo?
No.
It's like, well, what do you want for lunch?
That was me, Rick.
That was you?
Yeah, I was talking about Derek Carr and his passes, how pretty they are in the air, and somehow that got recorded. But I had to, I'm a guy that had to get the NAACP to get a drop, and B-Money took care of me. So now I got to, look at that, black don't crack.
I got the Nation of Islam down here. I came in a bow tie, man. Don't even front.
Real quick, Rick. I don't want to hijack the segment. Should Marvin Lewis be fired?
No way.
The team does not fear or respect him, and that's why they lost that game yesterday. Rick, tell me something else. Parcells, what? They would have been afraid what? To tell a 15-yard flag.
Tell me what coach Pac-Man Jones has ever behaved for. Tell me what coach Burfict has. Remember Burfict in the draft? Oh, red flags, red flags. They still took a chance on him. You know, he's running out of the stadium with the game-winning interception. Man. That should have been a flag there, too. But I just remember, Goo, when Lane Kiffin was here, the most impotent coach of all time, because that last game in Jacksonville,
yeah.
When Warren Sapp was melting down and Keith Millard, the D-line coach, had to come get him after a couple of flags and got thrown out. He got to the sideline. He walked right past Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin didn't acknowledge him. He just walked right past him. I would have been having a baby. Okay. I would have torn Warren Sapp a new one. QB killer, barbecue killer.
Okay, so let's take out the babysit analytics of this.
Yeah.
He's not won a playoff game in forever. How is he just? He's a black coach. I root for all of them, Rick. But
that's racist.
He's got to go. He's got to go, Rick. That's defending him.
No. Listen, that's a mom and pop shop back there. The way Mike Brown runs that team, you saw him on Hard Knocks. His daughter Katie does all the contracts. Marvin's been there forever.
So he's in a good place.
He's in an excellent situation. So you're going to go in and bring in another guy. Is he going to do any better?
It could have been Hugh. I thought that was going to happen.
It could be. I mean, I'm not saying that would be a bad move, but when you look around and coming as a Raider fan, 14 years with no winning seasons, to say, oh, five times in the playoffs, you didn't get it done, you got to go. If you want to take that perspective, you can, but I still think Marvin Lewis is a pretty good coach. And the other thing is, these players today, like to me, what Pac-Man Jones did was perfectly fine.
Why was Joey Porter, how was that not a flag?
Well, see, that's the thing. If I'm standing there and the linebacker coach or the team walks over, especially a guy who was known for what Porter was known, of course I push that guy out of there. And you know what that is? That's Pac-Man Jones' reputation. Remember him banging his head, Amari Cooper's head on his helmet?
I remember.
Making it rain. The security guard getting shot and paralyzed. I'm just telling you, all that, I think, added up to that one play. Yeah, you didn't get flagged for the Cooper thing, but you sort of cumulatively, I think that's what the ref... Oh, Pac-Man Jones is involved? It must be his fault. Because I would have done the same thing Pac-Man Jones did in that situation.
I hear you. We got Mark Purdy, Jeff Deeney, and Danny LaRoe. And file this under Who Cares? Last night, Rick, after the show, about 9:30, I'm on BART. And somebody got gunned down on BART in West Oakland last night, and I luckily was on the train right before that. They shot the man on BART, Oakland last night. So I'm happy to be here, Rick. It could have been me.
Damn, well, knock on
wood. What would you have said?
Don't jinx it.
All right. Take it easy, Rick.
All right, thanks, Goo. Wow, a guru coming perilously close there. I'm just waiting for the text now. I wish it was you, Holmes. I'm going to get a lot of those texts, too. All right. it's not a laughing matter. That's horrible. All right. 888-9. Definitely like Guru. I'm going to leave you with this, Rick. Somebody was murdered on BART. Oh, thanks. How do I talk sports after that?
888-9. That doesn't excite me.
888-957-9570. Text line 95795. Here's a prem question. Rick, do you think Leicester City will win the Premier League? I don't. I watched them play this morning. They were playing in the FA Cup, fourth round at White Hart Lane. I guess, yeah, technically fourth round. And Tottenham was lucky to get a handball there late on Dyer, and Kane slotted it home, 2-2 draw. They're going to have a replay now at Filbert Street. By the way, Tottenham's playing them on Wednesday as well in the league, so they're going to be seeing a lot of the Foxes coming up here. I just, when you look at the line, look, Claudio Ranieri, what he's doing there is he's doing a fantastic job. And I'm sure people at Chelsea wish that maybe the Italian had stuck around. But I just don't think they have the class up and down the lineup to survive. There's nothing wrong with Kasper Schmeichel. His dad's the greatest goalie of all time, arguably, and he's not too bad himself. From the 415, Rick, the Redskins are losing because they have a racist name. I don't think that's the reason they're losing. I think the Packers are better. And by the way, if the Vikings would have won, I would have got all, because I picked three road teams. Looks like all four road teams are going to win. I picked the Vikings to win. But you know what's funny is that with Cousins, with this whole you like that, and they were handing out the towels, the rally towels there in Washington, D.C., or I should say Landover, Maryland. And it said you like that, and then there was the Redskins logo, and then underneath you have all the sponsors. Comcast, DC, Coca-Cola, and some others. And it almost seemed like it was sort of a mocking thing because here's the Redskins logo, and then here's the towel that said, you like that? I don't know. I think that could have been misconstrued. And then Albert Hainsworth chimed in, and he said Redskins fans were, quote, nasty, ridiculous, and rude. I read that on CBS Sports, quote, nasty, ridiculous, and rude. But that's coming from Albert Hainsworth, who might be all-time the biggest waste of money in the history of the National Football League. When he was coming off, where was he, Tennessee, coming off, you know, oh, this is the best offensive lineman. He got $100 million, and from day one in D.C., he dogged it. You talk about the example, the cautionary tale of when a guy gets paid and he stops trying. Albert Hainsworth is the number one guy when it comes to that. He got his 100 mil and he literally didn't lift a finger. He wouldn't come to practice in time. He wouldn't hustle over to a huddle. He wouldn't do anything. And it got to the point where Mike Shanahan just didn't even play him anymore. And then Albert Hainsworth says, quote, Redskins fans are nasty, ridiculous, and rude. Well, it might be the fact that you are a giant waste of space. It's just like the money that Warren Sapp stole when he was in Oakland. They said QB killer, BBQ killer. And I'm the nerd that watches with my binoculars. And to watch him take a step and just stop and stand there, is the play over yet? God, that guy got his money. He got his ring. And, oh, he was cool on the internet. But, yeah, absolute waste. And whenever I see the Warren Sapp jerseys, I think, how can people buy Warren Sapp jerseys? And the guy just never lifted a finger to help the Raiders. We were excited about him for a quick second, but that was about just a quick second. All right, thanks for tuning in today. We got the Guru and Zachariah coming up next. As always, the text line 95795, they're very caller friendly as well. Get on the horn, 888-957-9570, and we'll see you next time. I'm Rick Tittle, 95.7 The Game.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.